Welcome to The Mental Breakdown. I'm Dr. Bernie Wilkinson.
I'm Dr. Richard Marshall.
And today we're going to talk about personality disorder called borderline personality disorder. Good morning. How are you doing today? Happy Friday.
Friday and
post Hurricane Matthew.
Post Matthew Day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, post Matthew morning. It went through overnight, and I think that we're through the worst of it now.
That's what it looks like, and we were spared.
Yes.
I don't know how the coasts are doing. We'll have to check and see how they're doing along the coast. But
the last time I checked, it really did. We didn't have much of an update, except for some of the same stuff from last night and overnight. But
we're about 50 miles inland,
something like that,
about halfway across the state.
Yeah.
And so we were spared the worst of Hurricane Matthew.
So, but I did see some of the stuff from down in the islands and stuff. That was pretty devastating.
Because it passed right over them.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but today's podcast, we're going to talk about a pretty specific condition called borderline personality disorder. Most of you have probably heard of that.
Specific, and I see it as a little more serious topic.
This is a
pretty serious personality disorder. We'll talk about what we mean by that, but this is a little more serious topic when we get into these kinds of more significant psychopathologies,
right?
I guess so. So stay tuned. This is going to be a serious discussion.
Right. So let's talk just very briefly. You know, personality in general is sort of that characteristic way or that pervasive pattern of the way in which we interpret the world around us. You know, the way that we take in stimuli, the way that we interpret that stimuli, and then interact with that stimuli.
And how we respond to
that.
So it's our characteristic day in, day out response to environmental events.
And while we typically think about personality in adults, what is really important to think about is that our personality development begins at birth.
Right.
The root of our personality is our temperament. And so when we have really good, even, smooth temperaments, that easy temperament, you know, we tend to maintain those types of characteristics throughout our life unless something dramatic happens or something significant happens. Similarly, when we have a very challenging, difficult, ill temperament, some of those characteristics will continue with us throughout most of our life.
Right. Yeah. And this is a bit of research that's been going on for over 50 years now.
Right.
It started in England, I think, with the first researchers who talked about temperament. And there are babies who are born who are very easy. You'll talk to parents and say, oh, no, she was an easy baby. She slept well. She ate well. Never gave us a problem until she got to age two or three, you know. And then other parents will say, oh, my baby was colicky and fussy wouldn't settle and wouldn't sleep and didn't like to eat and was throwing up. Those are babies' easy temperament versus difficult temperament.
Right.
So we have these two extremes. Most of us, of course, fall somewhere in the middle.
Somewhere in between.
But these are inborn characteristics.
Right.
Okay, we seem to bring them with us when we're born.
Right.
And then they're shaped over time by life events.
Right. Mm-hmm. And one of those life events... we're going to use this to sort of go right into our specific topic today. One of those particular events, again, that begins in that first year to year and a half or so of life is attachment.
Attachment and bonding, right.
There are two things that happen during those first 2 years of life. And the first thing that happens is something that we call bonding.
Right.
And that's from the parent to the child. When birthing centers and things like that where women have their babies now, they're created in such a way, or they're sort of engineered in such a way, that it's very home-like. It's very soft and comfortable. Mm-hmm. And if you have had a child probably within the last 20 years or so, what we're doing now is, instead of taking babies immediately to the nursery, babies are placed with their mother. The mothers are, unless there's problems or something like that, the mothers are allowed to hold them.
Right.
And we get a lot of skin-to-skin contact. Mm-hmm. And that creates, almost instantaneously, a biological connection from the parent to the child.
Right.
It doesn't go from the child to the parent, but from the parent to the child.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, it's really a fascinating concept because, you know, that's why it seems as though, you know, when the baby does, it is taken down to the nursery, the mother can go down there and the mother knows immediately which one is her baby. You look at it and all the babies look alike. But the mother knows exactly which one is her baby because it that connection happens immediately.
You can even blindfold mothers and they can smell, they will smell infants and they'll pick out which one is theirs by the smell.
Yeah, absolutely. And this is also why fathers are now really encouraged to be in the room and to hold the baby immediately because that too creates the bond from the father to the child. Something that didn't happen pre-1980s or so, 1990s, they didn't do that all that often back then. You know, remember the parents, the dad was typically out in the waiting room.
That's right.
And the baby,
if he was somebody would, there.
If he was,
right.
Somebody would come out and say, hey, this is what happened, this is where we're going. Right. And you're just like, oh, great. You know, yeah, and cigars and stuff. And then
when I was first talking to my mother about the pregnancy of the first child, she had no idea what I was talking about when I'm talking about dilation and effacement and labor and stages. She said, I don't know what you're talking about. She said, we went into the hospital, we were put to sleep, and we woke up a few hours later, and then we were given our baby.
There it was.
We weren't part of the, they weren't part of the process, okay? So you wonder what, I mean, I guess they bonded with us.
Yeah.
I think I did.
Yeah.
You know, but it was a very different situation years ago.
Right.
So more recently, we want this bonding to occur immediately.
Right.
And so now the baby, as Dr. Bernie said, babies are laid on the mother's chest immediately, assuming everything is okay, immediately after birth.
Right. Now, the reciprocal response to that is what we call attachment.
Right. The child.
The child connecting to the parent.
Right.
And that doesn't happen immediately. That happens over the course of about 12 to 18 months or so.
That's right.
And that's a really important evolutionary trait.
Right.
Because when, you know, it wasn't all that long ago that a large percentage of mothers died during childbirth.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so if we think about it again, biologically, survival based, if a child imprinted, if a human child imprinted on the mother, sort of like ducklings do with their mother duck, then if the mother passed, if the mother died during childbirth again, which was something that was not uncommon in our history, then the child would, like a baby duck, would have failure to thrive and potentially die.
Could die.
Because it doesn't, it loses that drive to, to survive, that drive to live.
That's right. The other thing is that, that when, remember, after conception, during the pregnancy, the baby is part of the mother.
Right.
Okay. It's a single, it's kind of a single unit. In the first year of life, infants, we believe, feel that they're still part of the mother.
Right.
That they're not distinct. They don't have an awareness that they are distinct. That happens during the second year.
Right.
When they realize that I'm a separate entity from my mother.
Right.
Okay. And it's at that point that we see attachment occurring. But I like this person and I want to be with this person, so they attach to the mother.
Right.
Okay. But that happens, as you say, during the second year,
right,
sometime before the second birthday.
And so what happens with attachment is that attachment is developed with the child's confidence and security and the just the emotional connection that it has with the parent. Because they know that their needs are going to be met, they are going to be taken care of, that someone cares for them, that someone is taking care of them, and is there to support them.
That's
and that's what builds the attachment, consistency.
Right, right, right. That you have a nurturing caregiver, and your needs are going to be met. Because the humans, unlike many other species, there's some species like horses, they're up and around in a few hours.
Right.
Okay. Humans, it takes 12 months.
Right.
So we are dependent upon a nurturing caregiver far longer than many species.
Okay? Absolutely.
Until, you know, it's about school age before we become truly independent. So the first 2 years, we are totally dependent on somebody else to meet our needs.
Right.
And we need that attachment to this nurturing caregiver.
Right.
So it is a sort of basic need that we have.
Right.
And if that need isn't met...
So the majority of us develop that attachment all is well, healthy, right, we're good to go. Mm-hmm. But sometimes people, we have difficulty developing that attachment. Mm-hmm. That can be because the because a child is placed in foster care, a child is orphaned, a child is a parent, you know, something that has happened I've unfortunately seen a number of times is the parent does fail to connect mm-hmm. and bond to the child, and so the parent has detached themselves from the child, and so the child doesn't have that emotional attachment mm-hmm. connection. And so during that first period section of their life, the child just never develops an attachment. And that has long-term consequences to the child's emotional and social development.
Right. We see this, sadly, with parents who are drug addicts, drug abusers, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. where they, you know, the most important thing in your life is getting high.
Right. Right.
And so we know that there are parents who give birth to children, but because they're still dependent, mm-hmm. because they're still addicted, they ignore the child. They neglect. The word is neglect the child. And those children who are neglected don't have this. They don't attach.
Right.
The parent is unavailable to attach to.
Right.
And so they're left to sort of fend for themselves. And there were studies done years ago with rats, because mm-hmm. rats mature within a few months. Mm-hmm. A baby rat is a teenager in a couple of months. And so what we learned from the rat studies were that we would take rat pups, mm-hmm. newborn rat, we'd take them out, stress them, mm-hmm. and then put them back with their mothers. And the mothers who licked and groomed and stroked and took care of these little rats, those rats turned out to be okay. But mothers who neglected mm-hmm. these stressed out rats, those baby rats turned out to be much more aggressive and irritable and active. And when they did the studies on these rats, the scientists discovered that there was actually a segment of DNA that changed mm-hmm. in those rats that were not cared for, the rats who were neglected, and it changed how their personalities developed over time. Interestingly, we found the same segment of DNA in humans.
Right.
Humans who are neglected have that same characteristic.
And it's important to point out what we mean by neglected, because we tend to think of neglected, I had food, mm-hmm. I had a house, we're talking about emotional neglect. That emotional connection. You know, we too often minimize the importance of that emotional connection, mm-hmm. and really that is critical to healthy attachment.
Right.
And so what we see is that regardless of the child's temperament, though it is somewhat involved, when we have a child growing up in an emotionally neglectful environment, mm-hmm. that child becomes at risk for developing something called borderline personality disorder. Among other things, it's not a guarantee, but that is one of the connections that we see happen mm-hmm. in the evolution or development of borderline personality disorder. So let's talk a little bit about what borderline personality disorder is. Mm-hmm.
What isn't it, first of all?
What isn't it?
Because there's a lot of confusion.
Right. There's a lot of confusion between borderline personality disorder and bipolar disorder.
Right.
And the reason for that is that one of the characteristics of borderline personality disorder is emotional instability and massive mood swings.
Right.
They will shift from one mood to another mood and back and forth. Mm-hmm. And so people see that and sort of uninformedly believe that that must be bipolar disorder.
Right. And they hear borderline, bipolar, borderline, bipolar. And there's this confusion.
Right.
But they're very, very different disorders.
Right.
I hesitate to use the word.
Right.
But they're very different phenomena.
And again, just to be clear with this, having mood swings does not mean that you have either one of them necessarily.
Exactly.
So we all have mood swings sometimes, and we all have, there are lots of individuals with difficulty with emotional regulation mm-hmm. that's not necessarily borderline personality disorder or bipolar disorder or maybe even any other diagnosis. It's mm-hmm. just...
It may not be a diagnosis.
It might just be a dysregulation. Mm-hmm. So when we think about borderline personality disorder and some of those characteristics, we have rapid mood shifts with little or no cause. There's very small triggers that shift to that. Uncontrolled anger.
Yeah.
So anger that comes with, again, little or no cause. It just kind of explodes out of nowhere. Mm-hmm. one of the more concerning ones is self-destructive behaviors. Right. So things like attempted suicide, self-mutilation, right. self-harm and cutting, and those kinds of things.
They turn on themselves. Right. You know, there are some people who turn on others when they get angry. People who have borderline tendencies tend to turn on themselves
right.
rather than on others.
And they'll do that physically, so we have the self-destructive acts. Right. But we also have the self-damaging behaviors where they right. do things that's just not in their best interest.
Self-sabotage.
Right.
You know, they just, it looks like stupid things that they're doing. Why on earth would you do that?
Right.
You know,
right.
You ruin a perfectly 10-year, you've had a 10-year relationship with this person and you just destroyed it in one evening.
Right, right. Because they served mac and cheese instead of spaghetti.
Right. And she knows I don't like that.
Something very right. small. Right, mm-hmm. right.
Could be it's not even a noticeable event to mm-hmm. most people.
Right. Mm-hmm. Oftentimes, individuals with borderline personality disorder will have identity disturbances. Mm-hmm. So they don't really have a clear sense of themselves. They don't right. know who they are. And
it's a fragmented personality
right.
rather than
an integrated, intact
personality. It's fragmented. There are pieces, and each piece gets to
right.
gets to act out.
Right. They'll often talk about feeling empty, like emotionless. Right. Purposeless, you know, they just don't have, it's just a sense of self is just not very, very healthily developed. Mm-hmm. Unstable relationships.
Right. That's.
And this is a really critical piece.
Right.
Because where we're going with this is, of course, living with somebody who has borderline personality disorder, which is really difficult.
Exactly.
And it's because of those unstable relationships.
Yeah. The unstable relationships to me are one of the key mm-hmm. elements of this whole thing, mm-hmm. because it's very difficult for
right.
these folks to maintain relationships. And if you are in a relationship, either your partner or a family member or mm-hmm. You're a child who has a parent
right.
with a borderline personality disorder, this can be a very difficult
right.
River to navigate.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, because what you see is, and we'll talk about it again in a few minutes, the push and pull.
Mm-hmm.
And so what these individuals will tend to do is they will become extremely close and almost intimate very, very fast.
Right.
And then almost as quickly, if something doesn't go the way that they want it to go,
right.
they pull away and rip away and it's done. Mm-hmm. And you have this connection, detachment, connection, detachment. And it's back and forth and it's really confusing and challenging and problematic for the person who doesn't have the bipolar
right.
or borderline.
For caregivers, whether it's physicians or dentists or psychologists or whatever caregiver, the person with a borderline personality disorder will attach
mm-hmm.
immediately to the caregiver. Say, you're my savior. You're the
right.
best thing that's ever happened to
right.
me. You are the absolute best. I'm going to tell my friends about you. You have saved my life. You have changed me forever. And 2 weeks later, you get a letter from the attorney,
right?
And because they're going to sue you,
right?
Okay, so it's a very
delicate.
They oscillate, they vacillate.
Mm-hmm.
They're just rapid change in how they feel about you. So relationships are very, very problematic,
right?
For these
right.
folks.
And along with that is a very, very common fear of abandonment,
yeah.
And this has to do with, again, going back to that early. Inability to create an attachment,
mm-hmm.
you know, that fear that there's nobody there for me.
That's
and
right.
so if they create a relationship with someone and they begin to fear that fear of abandonment
mm-hmm.
begins to get ramped up, they're going to detach because I would rather me be the one to end this relationship than you leave me.
That's right. The anticipation is that everybody leaves.
Right.
Nobody is going to be with me forever.
Right.
Okay. And so I'm always prepared for somebody leaving.
Right.
And the other people can never do enough
right.
to
right.
keep the relationship going.
Right.
You it doesn't matter what you do, it doesn't matter what you've done, it doesn't accumulate. You
right.
know, like I have relationships with people and they've been so wonderful over the years that I would never do anything to damage the relationship, no matter what they did now, because they've been so supportive over so many years. That doesn't happen with a person
right.
with borderline. Nothing accumulates.
Right.
Every day, it's like Groundhog Day. Every day you start again. And if you make me angry today, we're done.
Right.
We're done forever.
Right.
I'm cutting you off for the rest of my life.
And one of the more challenging aspects of this condition, and most personality disorders, is that individuals with the condition tend to be what we call egocentric.
Right.
And what that means is they don't really think that anything is wrong with the way that they think about things or interact with others. This is just life to them, and they sort of expect that other people are the same way.
That everybody is feeling the same way, or thinks the same way. Right.
And so because of that, it's extremely difficult to treat. It's extremely difficult to change that person because, you know, again, your personality is the way that you see the world. It's sort of like saying, no, that's not a yellow tie. That's an orange tie, and I'm going to do everything I can to convince you that you're wrong, that it's not a yellow tie. And I'm not going to convince you of that, or it's going to be very, very difficult for me to convince you of that. And that's sort of what it's like to try to change somebody's personality, that change the way that they see the world is really difficult.
It's very difficult for them to see any other perspective. It's like arguing with a young child. You know, young children get something in their head, and that's just how it has to be.
Right.
Okay. And that's what it's like arguing with a person with borderline personality disorder, is they just don't see it from another person's point of view. It's almost like they're stuck at a very young age of development.
And they see much of it as adaptive, because if my fear of abandonment is so great, it would make sense for me to take control of the relationship and end it before you can, because I'm not going to let you. Why would I want to go through that feeling of abandonment and that sense of loss?
Right.
So I'm going to take control of that situation, and I'm going to push you away
so that
you don't push me away.
Right.
And so for them, it tends to feel very adaptive and feel appropriate.
Yeah, it's working for them.
But for everybody else, it's problematic.
Right, very good.
Now, if you are a person who grew up in a home with a parent, and percentage-wise, it's more likely to present, borderline personality disorder is more likely to present in women than in men. So if you grew up in a home where, you know, you had a parent with borderline personality disorder, you probably recognize a lot of the stuff that we're talking about.
Right.
You probably experienced it where, you know, your parent, you know, they pushed you away, then they brought you close, and it's, you know, they showed love in very odd ways, because one day they'd be hugging and everything on you, then the next day or the next couple minutes, they're pushing you away and yelling and screaming at you. And then they go out and buy you something, and then they come back and, you know, they take it away from you. And that instability, again, in their emotional presentation.
Unstable relationships.
Is really problematic.
They're emotionally unstable, and that spills out into the people they have relationships with.
Right, right. So these interpersonal relationships, including the ones with their children, are just very unstable. And unfortunately, a lot of times what it leads to is divorces and things like that. And so then now the other parent isn't as involved, and the borderline parent will tend to really go for the jugular to keep the child away from the other parent, because now that parent, the other parent, the ex-spouse, left me. And so there's the abandonment issue. And so now everything is survival mode. And again, in their mind, that person is a really bad person, and I don't want my kid around them, because the kid is more of a, almost like a possession. It's something that I have to protect, sort of like you protect your sofa. You don't want them to take your sofa or you know, any of the furniture.
It's like
in
any
the house.
Other possession you have. I don't want them to take the car. I don't want them to the boat. I want the condo. I don't want him to have the condo.
Right.
And the children become one of those items.
Right.
They become an asset.
Right. And so what we'll see is very long, very arduous, very damaging.
Lengthy and
divorces and child custody considerations and that kind of problem.
Right.
So if you grew up in a home like that, you probably experienced some of those things. That's, of course, influences how you interact with the world and think about the world. And so when a person grows up with a parent that has borderline personality disorder, that person is at increased risk having the condition him or herself. Not guaranteed, but it's potential.
No, it increases the risk because you didn't have bonding and attachment in
because
those
of the inconsistency
years. So it affects your personality development.
Right. And so if the person that growing up in a home like that doesn't have borderline personality disorder, sometimes they develop other things that can be problematic as adults, such as a dependent personality. So, you know, if we think about what happens in some of these situations, you have a child, perhaps a child with a very easy temperament. They get along and they just flow and they move with everything. But then they have this borderline parent. That child's life then becomes focused on making sure that the borderline parent is happy. Right? They work very hard.
It's not a laughing matter, but you're right. I mean, they work and work and work and work to make that parent happy.
So you see situations where, you know, when they're teenagers, and it's like, why would you do that? Why would you, you know, why would you tell your, you know, not, it sounds terrible to say, why would you tell your parent that? Right. Why would you do that? Why would you go there? Why would you push that boundary? And it's because they want to do any and everything they can to make the parent happy. And those characteristics will continue into adulthood.
Right.
And so what we'll see in adulthood is we'll see an adult child of a borderline parent still trying to do everything that they can to make that parent happy, to appease that parent. And all they're really looking for, I believe, all they're really looking for is just that nugget of encouragement, that, that nugget of true emotion from the parent to say, oh, they do care.
I appreciate you. I appreciate what you're doing, and I care about you. It's never forthcoming.
And even if it is, it's so short-lived. It, because, you know, they'll say, and of course I've heard this before, you know, thank you so much for taking me out to dinner. I mean, it would have been nice to go to, you know, Olive Garden instead of, you know, instead
Wendy's.
Of Wendy's. But, you know, but hey, McDonald's. You know, I understand, you know. You know, if your husband was just working a little bit harder and making a little bit more money, we could have got... And all of a sudden, it's like, wait a minute, this it started out as encouragement and appreciation, and very quickly it turned into criticism and putting me down and putting my spouse down. And
right, or you take somebody out for dinner and then you get up the next day and so wait, we did all the stuff yesterday. I took you here, I took you there. That doesn't matter. I'm upset about what you did this morning.
Right. And then you say, wait, I just woke up. I didn't do anything this morning. Well, you know what? If you would have woke up 30 minutes ago, then...
You would know that I needed coffee and this wouldn't have happened.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's a very, very difficult relationship to navigate. If you're the caregiver, if you're close to a person with borderline personality disorder, it's exceedingly difficult to navigate.
Right, right. The unpredictability is so challenging.
Right.
So when we think about... When we think about this, okay, so what the real crux of what we need to talk about today is, okay, so what do you do? Say you're an adult or even a teenager of a parent with borderline personality disorder.
Right, right.
The most important thing that you can do, well, there's two very, very important things. We need three because there's got to be an odd number. There's two very important things. One is you need to educate yourself.
That's right.
You have to learn about this condition. You need to. There's books that you can read. There's videos that you can watch. We're actually talking about and have already started to outline a lecture series that we're going to put up on our other YouTube channel, Paydia, on personality and personality disorders. It looks like it's going to be about a 16 video series. And we're just going to go through all of them. We're going to talk what is personality, what is personality disorders, and then kind of move through each of them that way.
Right.
So we'll hopefully start recording that pretty soon. But in the meantime, there's, again, lots of books out there, lots of other videos and lots of information about how borderline personality disorder works, what it is, what it's not, and all that.
Which reminds me, we have many books on adult children of alcoholics. Isn't that the name of that book, Adult Children of Alcoholics?
Mm-hmm.
And so there are plenty of books written about that. There should be books written about all of these things because it's just as difficult being in a relationship with somebody with a borderline personality disorder as it is being in a relationship with somebody who is alcohol dependent or addicted.
Right.
So it's a difficult thing, and you're right. The first thing you have to do is you have to understand what you're dealing with.
Right.
Okay. And so you have to educate yourself. Know what you're dealing with, and that's the important first step.
Right. The second step is you got to get help. You're going to have to get some support because the support it's going to be difficult for you to really look at it from the outside see what's happening.
Right.
You're going to know that something's not right. You're going to sense probably because your spouse or somebody else said, "Hey, you know that's." Pretty messed up. What keeps happening? You know, why don't? So you need to get some help. Get professional help. See a psychologist or a counselor or somebody who knows a little bit about some of these personality disorders and right. get some guidance.
Because you're constantly going to be questioning, maybe it is my fault.
Right.
You know, maybe I did do something wrong.
Right.
You know, because you're going to constantly be blamed.
Right.
Okay. And after a while, you just get worn down and say, well, maybe it is me. Maybe if I just did this.
Right.
Maybe if I did a little bit more.
Right.
No, no, that's not something that you're ever going to satisfy.
That's the lure that pulls you
that's
in.
That's right. You keep getting pulled in that maybe I'll do this and maybe I'll do this. Doesn't matter. You're never going to satisfy the other
Absolutely.
Person.
Number three, I told you there's going to be three. The third thing is, and this is what you'll get through counseling and therapy, is you have the most important thing is structure. You have to create some boundaries.
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 Right.
You have to draw a line. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. There's no other way to say it, but it's challenging. It's mm-hmm. difficult because. You know, if you watch The Walking Dead and you see, mm-hmm. you know, they have the fences up and everything and the zombie, they just keep pushing and pushing. Mm-hmm. It will be like that. That parent with borderline personality disorder will keep pushing. They'll walk around and they'll find, is this a weakness? And they'll push there. And then they'll walk in somewhere. Is that a weakness? Mm-hmm. They will continue to look for that opportunity to sneak in there and break through those boundaries, but you have to hold fast. You have to have those boundaries.
And you're going to feel guilty doing it. See, that's the problem.
They're going to make you feel guilty
that's
for
right.
doing it.
One of the hallmarks of borderline personality disorders, they don't have any boundaries. They
right.
keep pushing and pushing and pushing. There's no limit to what they'll say. There's no limit to what they'll do. So when you're with a person who doesn't have boundaries, that obligates you mm-hmm. to set up the boundaries. You have to be the person to set up the boundaries.
Right.
But you're going to feel guilty about doing it.
Yeah. And again,
and that's where you need some professional help to say, no, you keep that boundary up, you're doing the right thing. So you need that professional, you need that encouragement that you're doing the right thing, because you're always going to feel like you're somehow doing something wrong or you're imposing on the person.
Right. Yeah, it's the guilt will be there.
Oh.
The immediate reaction will likely be anger. Fine.
That's
you know,
right. mm-hmm.
then you know.
You're just like right.
I'll just leave then. Right. You know,
You're just like everybody else. I thought I could count on you, and I can't. But you're just like everybody else,
right?
And you start to tug at your heartstrings.
And it will feel like that because that's the first go-to for you to mm-hmm. for them, hoping that you will say, you know what, that's all right, never mind,
right.
because perhaps that's worked in the past,
right?
And so they'll try that. The next thing is, you know, it's so lonely here mm-hmm. at the house all by myself.
Right.
You know, if only. I sure wish that you and the kids would come over and visit me sometimes. And
come over more often.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so now...
And what is the ultimate?
The emotional.
The ultimate is, well, I might as well kill myself.
Yeah,
nobody
right.
cares about me. I might as well just kill myself.
That's...
And they say that. They will say that to you.
They absolutely will. And we're not minimizing that. That is a very serious thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that if you have a family member who says those kind of things, you should take it very serious. And you should, you know, call an ambulance or something, have them checked out, especially if they don't live nearby,
right.
have them checked out. What you would rather do that than go over and for yourself.
Right.
You know, you would want to call an ambulance to go check out and see, make sure they're safe, make sure everything is okay. Mm-hmm. Here's their address. This is what they said on the phone. You know, can mm-hmm. you go check and make sure that, mm-hmm. you know, my mom or my dad or whoever it is okay. You don't want to go over there, because if you go over there, that worked.
Mm-hmm. They got you.
They got you there, which is what they really wanted.
Mm-hmm.
And again, not to minimize that type of threat, but if they got you there, there is nothing to stop them from doing it again the next time, because
mm-hmm.
they know that
they
that
know
will
that
work.
Works. Right.
Mm-hmm. So allow professionals who know what they're doing to go mm-hmm. and help them in that situation.
What did you say at the beginning? Draw us in, push us away.
Right.
Draw us in, push us away. And that's drawing in. I might as well kill myself. That's the ultimate how to get
right.
you
and
back
so you get,
into their life.
Right. If you think about that, how that would play out,
right.
they would say that you would go and you say, okay, are you okay?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, I'm fine. But hey, do you want some dinner or something?
Right.
You know, I was just thinking about making something. Mm-hmm. Well, you just told me you were going to come. You know, I was just, you know, I'm going to make this spaghetti. You want some spaghetti? I don't know why I'm thinking about spaghetti, but you want some spaghetti? And then before too long, you know, you're frustrated, and then it switches again. Well, you know, if you just come around every once in a while, I don't know why you make me have to do those kinds of things.
Right.
Why do you make me have to get to that point mm-hmm. before you'll come over and visit me?
Right. Right.
And it's that kind of just, how did that happen?
In other words, it's your fault. Right. You're here now. Now let me explain to you why all this is your fault.
Right.
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 That's what you have to guard against.
So those boundaries are critical. Mm-hmm. And it's most ideal if you set up those boundaries with a family member, like your spouse. Right. You know, if you're married, you know, set it up with your spouse, because your spouse is going to be your consistency.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Again, if you grew up in that type of environment, it's very likely that you're going to be bendable.
You're going to be
that's susceptible right. to mm-hmm. some of those techniques that your family member will use. Mm-hmm. And so you have to have somebody else there to say, nope,
right.
we're not going to be able to go over there this time.
That's
or
right. Let somebody else who's less involved,
right.
less engaged, let them reassure you.
Right.
And say, no, this is way beyond what you
right.
should be doing.
Right.
And yeah, that's really good advice.
Right.
Really helpful.
Yeah. Some of the things that I've encouraged in the past is, you know, as soon as, you know, if you're getting those phone calls or those text mm-hmm. messages or those mm-hmm. that contact from mm-hmm. your borderline relative, mm-hmm. you know, allow your spouse to make the first contact.
Right.
See what's going on. Hey, mm-hmm. you know, I know you were getting in touch with Susie.
Right.
You know, she's not available right now. Is anything right. going on? Mm-hmm. Can I help with anything? No,
everything's fine.
Everything's
right.
fine. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I'll let her know that everything's okay.
Right.
And
mm-hmm.
Because the person with borderline, even though they think that what's mm-hmm. happening in their world is what
right.
is normal and everything, they also know that it doesn't work with you, or they
right.
know that this isn't a technique. You can, and I think that because of that, a lot of people will interpret some of these things as intentional isn't the right word, manipulative isn't the right word, because it is manipulative,
mm-hmm.
but you know, animals, we can train animals that something, one thing works with this person but doesn't work with this other person. It doesn't mean that they have the cognitive skills
mm-hmm.
to manipulate
right.
in that way.
Mm-hmm.
It is a manipulation, but it's a manipulation based upon just based upon the way they see the world.
Right. That's right.
It's hard to figure think of a different way to say that.
It's almost not from their perspective, it's almost not manipulation, because
right.
it's just, this is the way the world
this
is.
This is survival.
Period. This is how the world works.
Right.
So I'm not taking advantage of anybody. This is just what I need to do.
So maybe that's the way to say it. It's not intentional manipulation.
No. Mm-hmm.
It is manipulation.
Right. Yeah.
But it's not intentional manipulation.
Right. Yeah. They're not doing it with that in mind. They're just saying, I need this. I need to have this. I need to have it now.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, yeah. I'm going to, I might fall down and hurt myself or something, but I just got to clean this house.
Right.
Because nobody else is going to clean this house.
Can't get anybody else to help me.
Anything they can do to just pull you in there. And it's, again, it is a manipulation, but it's just the way that they see
right.
the world.
Right. And that's why it's necessary for you to set up the boundaries.
Right.
You have to set very clear for yourself, how far am I going to go?
Right.
And you just can't go beyond that, because otherwise you're entering their world.
Right.
And that's what you don't want to do, because
right.
that doesn't help you or them.
Right. Because you will not be successful in their
no.
world.
Mm-mm.
And so
no.
just a couple of quick examples of what those boundaries may look like, because it's going to vary and depend on your particular situation.
Mm-hmm.
But those boundaries may be, we have a very prescribed time when we interact.
Mm-hmm.
So we may say, you know, I will come to your place once a month, or we may see
right.
each other at church, and then we'll come after dinner on Sunday, or after church on Sunday afternoon
mm-hmm.
for lunch, and
right.
that is our time together.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we will make sure that we have our own privacy in our house.
That's right.
A lot of relationships really need
mm-hmm.
privacy,
mm-hmm.
and so, you know, sometimes these parents who have these tendencies, you know, they'll figure out ways to get keys to your house, or they'll have ways to where they can access your personal space,
right.
whether you want them there or not. And so, you know, making sure that you have locks on the door that, you know, you have the keys to, but they don't have access to. And you have to create those boundaries
mm-hmm.
in that kind of way, so that they can't have all of the control over when
want.
You have that access.
They're seeking control.
Absolutely.
And you just can't relinquish it. You can't
right.
give in, because it's not going to be in their best interest to
right.
have that kind of control.
Right.
So you constantly have to be setting up the boundaries and be very, very cautious
mm-hmm.
to set up the boundaries that you need to have a reasonably normal life.
Right. Another really simple strategy, and really this is a strategy that everyone else uses,
right.
but you probably just don't know to use it, or maybe just haven't thought about using it. And that is, we're always challenged with those unexpected phone calls. You know, those phone calls that come at any time,
late at
any
night,
hour,
usually.
And you know that it's going to lead to you having to do something that you don't really want to do.
Right.
So in those situations, don't answer. So what we do instead is we don't answer, you hit ignore or whatever, mm-hmm. and then you send a text and you say, is everything okay? I can't talk right now.
Right.
Is everything okay? I can call you mm-hmm. Back when I have a chance. You right. know, something non-specific. Don't say I'll call you back in 5 minutes. Don't do any of that kind of stuff. But just say I'll call you back when I can, right. and allow that relative to text back or to respond back in some way. You're not ignoring them, so they're not going to keep right. calling over and over again because you're not ignoring them. They may call back time and time again, but
right.
you're not ignoring them. But you're also making sure, sort of alleviating some of your stress that, okay, everything is okay, you know, everything's
right.
gonna be fine.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is that everyone does that.
Yeah.
Everyone else with healthy relationships, right. we all do
that. Exactly.
And so there's no reason why you wouldn't be able to do that or you shouldn't be doing that as well.
Absolutely, because remember that if the spirit moves them to call you at 11 or 12 o'clock at night mm-hmm. and keep you on the phone for an hour or two, that's what they're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the ability to set that kind of a boundary.
Right.
Most of us would say, well, no, they have to get up in the morning, she works, they have to get up with the kids,
right.
so I shouldn't call at 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
That's a boundary that we impose on ourselves. We're talking about people who don't impose boundaries on
right.
themselves. It's an inability to, it's not, again, they're not being bad people or manipulative. It's just an ability they don't possess.
Right.
Okay. So they don't possess that ability, then you have to provide it.
Right.
Okay. You then have to provide the boundary because they can't.
Exactly. Exactly. So
I mean, if they, that's what they can't provide. So
right.
we provide it for them.
Right. Treatment for borderline personality disorder, again, it is really challenging. Usually because of that tendency towards being egocentric,
mm-hmm.
they don't even know that they need therapy. So there's no, they
right.
don't pursue anything. Sometimes when they do, there's a new type of therapy, newer type of therapy called dialectical behavioral therapy,
right.
which seems to be somewhat effective. It's long. It
takes
a time.
Long time. Yeah.
Very
very intensive and very very lengthy.
Yeah, but it's really. But
I mean,
it would make
years.
Sense.
We're talking about years.
Yeah, and it would make sense that it takes a long time because again, we're talking about the way in which you interpret the world. So
mm-hmm.
that's
mm-hmm.
a lot of deep work that you have to do with that. So
mm-hmm.
so but as far as what happens in general is it's not as typical for someone with borderline to seek treatment on their own.
Because right. they don't have the problem.
They don't have the problem.
It's everybody else who has the problem.
Exactly.
And that's why they don't seek therapy.
Yeah. So the hopes of them getting that type of help, there's some hope there perhaps, but I wouldn't hold on to that. You develop your boundaries
right.
instead and you hold to that and you know, hopefully you'll be able to maintain that in such a way that that you'll be able to have a successful relationship
right, right.
under the terms that you can manage.
That you can manage, right?
Right.
Right. right.
So.
Yep.
All
tough
right.
Tough case, tough problem.
Yeah.
That's a big, big problem.
It is. It really
it's especially, especially difficult for children.
Right.
You know, who are growing up with a parent who has borderline.
Yeah.
Young children don't understand. But a teenager starts to understand that there really is something wrong with mom.
Yeah.
This is so inconsistent. Something's wrong with mom, but it's very difficult for a teenager to set boundaries on a parent,
right.
opposite
yeah.
of what should be happening. But
if
you're getting into that situation, give us, again, seek some
help.
Yeah, get some help,
because yeah.
it's a tough thing to deal with, and it's very, very long term.
Right.
This isn't something you fix quickly.
Right.
When I first read the woman who developed dialectical behavioral therapy, her name is Janet Lineman. And when I read her book, she was taking us through a case, and she office visit number 57, and then office visit number 72, and
yeah.
office visit 103, and that's years worth of therapy.
Yeah.
That's 2 years of weekly therapy.
Right.
Very very unusual stuff. So
yeah.
it takes a long time to fix this. It's a serious matter.
Yeah. So. Figure out your boundaries, get the support, get some help that you need,
yeah.
and educate yourself, of course, and then work in that direction. So,
right. Good advice.
All right. And so, like we said, you know, we're going to start working on that lecture series that's going to include all of the not just borderline personality disorder, but lots of others as well.
All the others, right?
Because there's borderline personality disorders in a cluster of personality disorders that includes, you know, three others.
That's right.
So,
and there's no medication for this. It's not. This is one of those disorders where you can't use medication to then do therapy.
Right.
Like with ADHD, use medication, slow everything down, and you can do some interventions. Depression. Yeah. You can give antidepressants and then do some interventions. There's no medication for this.
Yeah, not really. There's some indication that perhaps there's a problem with serotonin as it relates to folks with borderline personality disorder. So you'll see some people prescribed either an antidepressant type of thing. Sometimes because of if the mood dysregulation is really out of whack, sometimes you'll see even a antipsychotic prescribed.
But you're treating the mood, but not the personnel.
Right, you know, you're treating the
other
symptoms
right?
Not the personality disorder.
Right,
so,
right. Mm-hmm.
So it really is challenging. But all right, well,
good.
We hope it was helpful. We hope you're able to use that information. And certainly, if you have questions, write to us. Let us know, because this is.
If you suspect that a family member might be struggling, or a family might be struggling with a family member, let us know.
Let us know.
We can help you out.
Or contact, again, other mental health providers in your area that can help and give you some support that you need. So, all right.
Good.
Well, great.
Friday.
Have a great weekend.
Yes.
And we'll
great
be back.
And productive.
Yeah. We'll be back next week with another episode of The Mental Breakdown. So, until then, I'm Dr. Bernie.
I'm Dr. Richard.
We'll talk to you then, and forget to be afraid.